drugs.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 429, and we are speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's on Skype with us this time from Albany, New York, and I'm out here in Denver. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Wishing I was in Colorado.
Oh, I know. You got to bring some money, though. It's a little pricey in these shops.
I'm afraid I know what you mean.
I guess I got West Coast problems, because I'm sure the price on the streets out there in the East Coast is probably as high or worse.
Let's just say a $300 ounce is a real find around here.
Oh, no kidding. Well, folks, this is our cannabis Q&A, so if you've got any questions, make sure you get into our chat room. We'll take your questions and get them right before one of America's leading researchers here. We also like to start things off by giving Dr. Mitch the first word in what's the latest in cannabis science.
Wonderful new data on cannabis helping diabetic neuropathy. Some intriguing media coverage about cannabis helping dogs. A nice critique of the marijuana is addictive literature, as well as some nice ideas about new research on childhood brain cancer.
Yeah, let's start with the childhood brain cancer. That's something that came out of Colorado here. So I'm in Denver. It seems appropriate. What's going on in this new research?
Looks like some nice use of funding where researchers are going to get 50 kids into a randomized clinical trial and follow them up for at least one, if not 3 years. I'm extremely optimistic about this. It looks like they're going to make good use of the data. They've got a really nice team, and I'm completely optimistic that this is going to work out well. And the fact that it's at Children's Hospital Colorado really reassures me that this is the kind of thing where we're going to have good detailed data with a lot of dependent variables and really get to give cannabis treatments the benefit of the doubt.
And this isn't just treatment of symptoms related to their treatment for cancer, but actually treating and killing the cancer with cannabis?
Fortunately, they're going to go ahead and take a look at the correlates of some of the other treatments as well, but the opportunity for cannabis to work in conjunction, at least with radiation and some other therapies, is also going to be there. So I do feel like this is going to put a great dent in some of the criticisms about how cannabis can interact with other treatments.
Now, it's so heartening, you know, with the, you know, last year the big story was CBD oil for epileptic kids, and now this, in that, you know, we've been beaten about the neck and shoulders with what about the children for so long in the marijuana debates, that it's actually turning out in our favor.
I couldn't be happier. This is splendid that this research is happening.
All right, let's look at this vaporized cannabis and diabetic neuropathy. First of all, what is that? And second of all, how is vaporized cannabis helping?
What's intriguing is this is a source of pain where diabetics basically have damage to the nerves related to blood flow, actually to the nerves themselves. It's really complicated and incredibly painful, and the kind of thing that you don't often think about as a side effect of diabetes. We've seen cannabis at moderate doses do well with other kinds of pain, and it makes perfect sense that this ought to work. AIDS-related neuropathy has responded well to vaporized cannabis, and I'm really delighted to see that this is also generalizing to neuropathy related to diabetes.
Yeah, good news. That's diabetes runs in my family. I lost my grandmother to it. My dad's got it, so I got to lay off the gummy bears, Doc.
I should caution that the diet is definitely a big contributor, so anything you can do to go to that plant-based, low-sugar diet is probably worth your while.
Okay. All right, let's get to a question from our chat room. John Thomas asks, what about the new study in the journal Hippocampus, where researchers at Northwestern University found problems regarding the heavy use of marijuana as an adolescent on those users' long-term memory.
What's intriguing here is we've got a study that I am, you know, definitely behind cautious use, especially for adolescents. I don't want to see folks starting early if they're not medical users, and I really am behind that kind of caution. Nevertheless, when you look at a study like this, they take an awful lot of tests. They do an awful lot of memory tasks, and then a subset of them tend to show modest deficits. So I don't want to make too much of this, but I do want to caution folks, the plant is not for kids and the plant is not a toy. You can't encode new information during intoxication, at least not easily. And long term, you really want to make sure you're getting time off and don't start too early in life.
There we go. That's good advice for everyone out there listening. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine here in Cannabis Q&A. If you got a question, get it into our chat room. And if you want to keep it private, you can always email it to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. All right, this story on the sick and elderly dogs, medical marijuana for dogs. What's up with this?
What's funny about this is when you go back to O'Shaughnessy's work back in the 1800s, he actually gave cannabis to dogs and showed that indeed they do have some of the same reactions that humans have, particularly in response to pain. And there's some really heartfelt stories here of pet owners providing edibles basically to their dogs and seeing a lot of positive effects. I want to be cautious about it because I'm not a veterinarian, but the CB1 receptor is the CB1 receptor. Now, some of the products out there are made from industrial hemp, and I honestly can't imagine they would be necessarily very helpful, but others really do have both THC and cannabidiol and might really help an aging dog. The industrial moves around this are very tricky, and the laws are completely insane. So I you know, I can't imagine that this is going to be an easy thing to get access to necessarily, especially for folks outside of states that have legal markets. But I think this is really going to be the wave of the future, and we're going to see a lot of veterinarians prescribing this sooner or later.
So this isn't necessarily relegated to just mammals, is it, this endocannabinoid system?
It's funny because actually there are, you know, literally unicellular organisms that have CB1 receptors, and you can see them when THC is in the thing starting to move around and try to find food more. I mean, it's stunning how this moves down the phylogenetic spectrum.
So when my college roommate was getting the iguana stoned, that was actually working?
Odds are high that the iguana was really stoned. I don't know how much behavioral change you might have seen, but the iguana might have enjoyed his food a little more.
There we go. All right, let's get to this. You know, USA Today is starting to weigh in on the cannabis issues and legalization, and they pose the big question that's been going around since the 70s. Will big tobacco become big marijuana? What's the takeaway from this?
Well, this article suggests that the tobacco companies are saying they're really not interested and they have no plans of entering the market. I don't believe this for a second, Russ, and I hate to sound like the paranoid cannabis activist. I was part of a big, well, basically when there were tobacco suits in California, I was part of a team that went through all their papers, and we did find things where it looked like they were experimenting with branding. There was a sort of Marlboro-looking thing that had marijuana on it. I got a feeling that, you know, they really are positioned well. They have the rolling machines. They have all the stuff to enter big, but they're not going to go until they get a federal market open, and then we better watch out. So I feel like this may be a little bit ingenuous to say that they really don't have any plans.
Mm, you know, I can't imagine that tobacco executives might, you know, just lie to our faces like that, Dr. Mitch.
It's hard to believe, but after watching them all say nicotine is not addictive, I'm a little apprehensive when they say we have no plans to enter the marijuana market.
Well, you know, I think one aspect of this is it's going to be the Budweiser, the Marlboro, the big, you know, cheap, easy to get kind of stuff, but I don't know anybody who's going to necessarily be smoking that. So it'll be interesting to see how that might develop with those guys. I think the good news is that, in an odd way to call this good news, is that we still have federal Schedule One, and they're not going to touch it if it's federal Schedule One. Maybe rolling this legalization out state by state for a while isn't such a bad thing.
I think there are adaptive things, and I also like the idea of people getting some local brand loyalty so that if national brands do open up, they really just wouldn't be interested.
Mm. Boy, we'll have to keep an eye on this as it develops. And of course, once California goes in 2016, I think that's when the ball really starts rolling on that. All right, let's get to another question that we've got here, another story we had here. The Stranger doing a good piece on whether or not marijuana is addictive.
This was delightful, and it quotes my friend Roger Rothman, who's in the Seattle area, and points out that this 9% of users become addicted number has become reified as if it's some kind of outrageous, unarguable fact, when in fact, when you take a closer look, among folks who start later in life, it's probably more like 2 to 3% actually develop dependence symptoms. And the definition of dependence is turning into this really outrageous moving target. So the DSM-5 has come out with what they're calling substance-related disorder. And suddenly, instead of 3 symptoms, you only need 2 symptoms, and they don't have to be tolerance and withdrawal. They might be something else. And craving is one of those symptoms, which in my lab we're really making fun of, because you can probably crave cannabis even if you've only used it once. So I want people to, you know, take cannabis's addictive potential in mind when they're thinking about daily use, but also interpret these data with quite the grain of salt. Mm. And I want to emphasize that whatever marijuana dependence is, if it exists at all, it's nothing like, say, dependence on the opiates or even alcohol dependence.
Yeah, moving the goalposts. It reminds me of Reagan declaring ketchup a vegetable so that they could meet a certain definition. Well, Dr. Mitch, I know I just went across Idaho and Wyoming over a 2-day span and had no cannabis in that 2-day span. My lower back hurt a little more than it usually does. I was a little grumpier. It was a little harder to get to sleep. And then we made it to Fort Collins, so everything's fine now.
And what a surprise. Your back feels fine and you're sleeping great.
I feel great. I don't know how that worked, because I was buying this weed on the recreational side, so I don't know how it had medical effects. They must have made a mistake somewhere. Well, folks, join us every Monday with Dr. Mitch Earlywine here on the Cannabis Q&A segment. You can also get these replays, this show replays 3 hours from now, no matter where you're listening to it. So if you missed the first part of this, you can get that as well. You can reach Dr. Mitch by email at 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. Any plans for 420, Dr. Mitch?
As it turns out, I'm giving talks the whole last half of the month, almost everywhere I go. So I'm not going to be able to make a big deal out of it, but I am spreading the word, and I'm really happy about that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Nice talking to you from Denver, Colorado, everybody. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch next week. See you then.
Enjoy.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We've got a great interview coming up with Kayvon Collett-Barry from Denver. He's with Denver Relief, and he's running for the Denver City Council. We talked to him just a couple hours ago. It's coming up to you damn near live next.
Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.